Hello and welcome to MGO Blood Podcast 1.3. This week we will talk about the Western Michigan game with myself and Tim Sullivan of MGO Blog, surprising. And we will talk about the Notre Dame game, which is upcoming, with Brian Stouffer of House Rock Built, which is now sort of kind of defunct, but did give the world the Mike Valenti rant, and anybody would be proud of that accomplishment. First, we are going to talk about Western with Tim. Tim, hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Not too bad. Before we get to anything, I have a very important question for you, Mr. Cook.
All right.
Rock music. Discuss.
Oh, God. Oh. Ugh. I sent a really, like, pissy email to Bruce Mate, actually, about it. I was like, what can I do to make this stop? And he was like, are people really that upset about it? And I was like, well, I'm kind of a bad test case because, like, I've hated it. And also Everybody who talks about it on my site, like, hates it very much. So, but yes, everybody hates it and you should stop doing it immediately.
Honestly, I was not as offended by it as I thought I would be. It came on and I was like, well, this isn't nearly as hokey as I thought it was going to be.
No, come on, man. That's terrible.
It's not good. It's not like they're playing instead of the band. They're playing when the band is like...
Well, there was like a commercial break where they played Sweet Caroline, and it's like the band can play that.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
yeah.
That is like...
Same with either Living on a Prayer, Don't Stop Believing.
Right. I mean, like, it's just so much better, like, when the band is actually playing Living on a Prayer, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that has authenticity to it, and it doesn't remind me of a minor league soccer game.
We've moved on from minor league hockey?
Minor league hockey, yeah.
What? Dude, major indoor soccer league, come on.
Oh, yeah. Yes. MISL is pretty much the bottom of the barrel when it comes to, like, professional sports leagues.
So you're not happy about
it,
is what we're
it.
Getting at here.
Like, there were a couple times when they played stuff, like, sort of in between plays when the band couldn't. I mean, I am never going to want to hear AC/DC instead of Let's Go Blue, basically. Because I can hear AC/DC anywhere.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, like, it's the what makes the college game appealing to me, at least. It's, like, it's authentic. It's not like NFL seems just so sterile and, like, let's blast music through our speakers and, like, nothing that is actually, like, organic from the experience happens. And
right,
so I totally see what you're saying.
Like, it's just generic, you know? Like, I want to go to a Michigan game. And anything that is not distinctively Michigan about that, which is mostly in terms of atmosphere of the band, is detracts from my experience. I've always been very opposed to it, and I didn't get any less opposed.
It did not sway your opinion?
No. It's just, like, I don't mind it in pregame warm-ups and stuff. Like, that's totally cool, because the band's not out there and all that stuff, and it's something to listen to when there's not a whole lot going on, but, man.
All right. Now that we have that out of the way, let's talk about the actual football game, which I guess is what we were there to see. We were not there to listen to the rock music. So what did you think? First, I guess we can talk offensively. Quarterbacks, go.
You know, that looks exactly like the spring game from Forcier.
Yeah, like, he was on.
Yeah, he ran around. He wasn't quite as accurate. There were a couple of communication errors. But, I mean, man, that when he signaled that Junior Hemingway deep and then threw on the run and it hit Junior Hemingway between the numbers, it was like, you know, I mean, like, the clouds opened up and a house showed up and said, look at what I have given to you. It was fantastic. And then, like, Denard Robinson's first play could not have been more perfect.
It perfectly encapsulated what he is. It wasn't a well-executed play, but somehow it ended up being ridiculously effective.
All right. Are you seriously playing this game as we are talking?
Yeah.
What is this?
It's
what
mindless. It's Farmville.
It's Farmville. All right. He's playing it as, like, I understand, like, when I'm talking to, like, somebody else about, like,
it's
Notre
mindless.
Dame game.
I'm just sitting here.
But now I'm talking to him.
Barrels.
And he's buying a bunch of barrels.
All right. I'll close.
All right.
Close Farmville.
I don't know. Is this too much of a time commitment for you? You got to go back to Farmville?
No.
We were talking about Denard Robinson.
We were talking about Denard Robinson. Back to business here.
Yes.
Chase Forcier, good. Denard Robinson, good. Anything bad on offense?
I was a little bit concerned that they couldn't really just plow them when they did the zone read stuff. And Molk, who is, of course, my hero, picked up a couple of holding calls. Mm-hmm. They got another couple. I mean, that might be just early season sloppiness.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and Coach Rod mentioned that in the post-game press conference. As good as the offense looked for most of the game, there were execution errors, including penalties, that they need to eliminate when they play opponents that have more even talent with us.
Yeah, I was disappointed that they didn't get some of those like gashing runs that they saw last year when somebody would just shoot into the secondary. What?
Now I have to awkwardly look at you now that my computer is closed.
I mean, that was the only thing that really like concerned me, is that we didn't just blow that MAC team off the ball. I mean,
I was actually kind of, one thing that I was worried about was, I mentioned this in the preview, if the offensive linemen get to the second level and spring a long run, there wasn't any really long run from a running back. Like, there was the one Robinson one. There wasn't, right, like, you know, the 65-yard scamper for a touchdown,
exactly,
that I was hoping for, too.
I mean, I was hoping that at some point that was just, they were going to pack away all the clever stuff and save it for the Notre Dame game. So, I mean, that was pretty much the only disappointment. I mean, the things that, other than the quarterbacks, that leapt out at me as much better than I thought they were going to be would be Kevin Coger. I mean, that catch was sick. And it was even more sick because he had to jump so high in the air, and he's like a tight end. And I mean, I think that guy is like, I underestimated how much of a part of the offense he's going to be.
And on that play in the press box, I saw the guy open, and I was kind of like quietly muttering, like, throw the ball. And then Tate threw the ball, and the incident, it left his hand. And I was like, God damn it, he threw a horrible pass. It's completely uncatchable. And like, everybody in the press box was just like, oh my God, what just happened in my life? Like, I saw the most amazing thing so far today.
That was pretty much the reaction to Devin Gardner for the entire game at Eastern. They just thought the guy was Superman. But, I mean, what did you take from the offense?
Same things. A few execution errors. The holding penalties, and penalties in general, were too many on both sides of the ball. No big runs bothered me. I think once you see the quarterbacks running in an actual game a little bit more often, I think they were a little too ready to pull the ball out on the zone read play instead of giving it. There were a couple times where I thought that they probably should have given it.
Tate had something like 12 carries, which...
Yeah. But other than that, it looked pretty good. Obviously, the second half was mostly like, hey, let's just sit here and plow into the line and let David Cone play a little bit.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if Darko is the human victory cigar, then David Cone is...
Even better.
Yes, he's like the human victory Cuban cigar. So the other thing that struck me with the offense is that I think Brandon Miner is clearly a superior option to Brown. Mm-hmm. I mean... We've seen Brown for two of the last three games now because he was the feature back in the Northwestern game, and he falls down a little bit more easily, I think, than Miner. He's a bit faster, I'm sure, but I think Miner's
got that tough right. running ability, as I'm sure many members of the Penn State secondary can tell you.
Or one particular one, if he remembers what the heck was going on. But hopefully I really hope we get Miner back. On defense.
The sound of it from that, actually, was at the post-game press conference, was he probably could have played. They might have played him if they needed him. They didn't, so he was rested for one more week, I think.
On defense, I mean, it looked like a pretty good performance. I'd like to go back to check, you know, the film. I'll do when I do the UFR, which I have already done by the time you've heard this. But Craig Rowe, who a MGO board posted would start and got trashed for it, did start, and he did play very well. He had
upvote that man.
He had at least half a sack, and then I think he caused another one.
He had a ton of pressure. Martin had a ton of pressure. Van Bergen even got a little bit of pressure, and Brandon Graham won't show up in the stat sheet. He had one tackle
for
loss, but he was in the backfield all day. I think Tim Hiller is going to have nightmares about Brandon Graham.
Absolutely.
For weeks.
He should have caused at least two interceptions because he hit he hit Hiller and the ball just like flew skyward. And like, I mean, I know that there's like at least three plays that he's getting a +2 on. So he's at +6 at the baseline if he did anything in the run game. So, I mean, from talking to Stouffer, like, I think that he's the key guy because their left tackle situation is pretty iffy. And, man, on passing downs, he just blew past Western's guys. And, I mean, if Michigan's going to win the game, they're going to have to shut down the long passing game. And Graham's the guy who does it. He does not the secondary.
We'll move on to the next level, I guess, and talk about a much maligned player who's at a new position this year. And that would be one Stevie Brown. He looked like a football player who is competent and perhaps even good,
you know,
I thought.
Yeah, like I mentioned this in the season preview, is that whenever Brown did something good that showed up in UFR last year, it was because he was in man coverage on somebody. And he's very athletic. That's why he was such a highly ranked recruit. And it's not that easy to be that athletic and be that close to a guy and then screw up the angle on that guy. So he was just...
So as long as he doesn't have to close space between himself and...
Like overruns and all that stuff, but like short zones and just tackling people and being fast, he's good at.
I think being closer to the line of scrimmage probably helps him there too, because there's not as much space to react and take a bad angle and all that sort of stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but this is, I mean, this is kind of what Stevie did last year at some points, where like he looked pretty good for a game or two, and then he would just. But yeah. You know, I think it's a good move, and I think he'll be somewhere between functional and good.
All right, and so we'll go. I guess the last part that we haven't talked about yet was the secondary. Starters good, except for maybe a couple safety mistakes on the one long play.
And I didn't see anything that I didn't like from secondary until the long play. I mean, the most disturbing thing of that was that Floyd was the guy who came on, and it wasn't Turner. And then watching that guy just smoke him, like he was probably two steps behind Floyd when that ball went in the air. And then by the time it came down, he was two steps in front of him. I mean, that's not a guy who can be a Big Ten cornerback, I don't think. I mean, I think you're going to see him move to safety whenever they can move anyone to safety, which I don't know if that's next year or the year after. I mean, it just speaks to how shallow the secondary is. And Sissoko's a little bit dinged up, so I mean.
Yeah, and that was one thing I was worried about coming out of the game is, okay, we have two good corners. Can the other guys stop Notre Dame's next player? And it doesn't sound like they have like a go-to guy other than the tight end, so it might not be as huge of an issue as I thought. But if Sissoko or Warren needs to come out of the game for any reason, including Sissoko's shoulder injury, it could be trouble.
Yeah, that's basically my take on the whole thing, too. It was nice to see Olson Abbott hit a 44-yarder, and Wright's kickoffs were pretty good. So, I mean, that's small dose of hidden yards. And nobody fumbled on special teams.
Yeah.
No fumbles. They held on.
Few returns, mostly fair caught, but it was better than nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was supposed to fair catch all those balls. Yeah.
There
was one that was borderline, but I mean, given what happened last year, I'm all for borderline stuff being fair caught. My impression of the team was it's a lot better than I thought it was before the season.
I was thinking the same thing too.
I mean, it's kind of tough to tell against a MAC opponent, but just the ability of both quarterbacks to perform well in a live fire game.
Yeah. And one thing is, Western's defense was supposed to not be very good, but I was really impressed with the Michigan defense, because Western's offense was supposed to be really good. Like, for a MAC offense, Tim Hiller's supposed to be like an NFL-caliber quarterback.
They returned most of their offensive line.
Yeah, they had, I think they started 4 fifth-year seniors on offensive line. So this was not like your average like Eastern Michigan team. This was a pretty good offensive power that was supposed to, and still probably might, challenge for a division title in the MAC and potentially the entire conference. I was really impressed that the defense was able to shut that down.
Yeah, Hiller was kind of off sometimes. Like, he would throw like those like easy screens to the sideline, and they just sail over the guy's head. So he was, I mean,
by like 15 feet.
Yeah, they got a little bit of help from Hiller, not really living up to the hype, but. I was impressed.
There was, I guess, third quarter when Western was able to move the ball a little bit. They never got any scores out of it. They were kind of nickel and diming down the field. That was against the second team defense. Is that something to worry about?
It wasn't really a second team defense. They pulled out.
There
Sissoko,
were some second team players
and
on
they
the
started.
Defense,
what they did say. Is they started rotating a lot on the defensive line, and you can tell that there's just a big drop off to the second team defensive line. I guess Heron and Rowe are probably pretty close, but I mean they're. When you take Martin out and put in
Sagesse
or Will Campbell, I mean, that's a big drop-off. Mm-hmm. And take Martin out. I mean, not Martin. Take Graham out. I mean, and then you're putting
there's
in a walk-on.
There's nobody like Graham on this roster, which is scary for next year. But for now, as long as he can stay healthy, it's probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, next year, you got Rowe and you've got Martin, then you can probably fill in a couple blanks on the defensive line. But this year, if Graham goes down, or Warren goes down, or Sissoko goes down, it's just it'll crush the defense.
Moving along, what do you think we will see this weekend?
Gotta make that more specific, I think.
Do you think that the defensive performance was just because it was against a MAC team? Do you think the offensive performance was just because it was against a MAC team? Do you think Notre Dame and Michigan are more evenly matched than you thought before? Do you think your opinion of each was upgraded? General big picture things, what do you think about Michigan Notre Dame now after 1 week of data on each team?
I'm more confident about the game than I was before the season started, just because Notre Dame managed to shut out Nevada, but they also gave up something like 5.3 yards a carry, which is, I mean, doesn't seem like they got a whole lot better as a rush defense from last year when Michigan was just trashing them with, you know, Sam McGuffey and that offensive line, which was still in its completely horrible phase. So I can easily see Michigan doing basically the same thing that they did at Western in terms of yards and yards per carry. And then, you know, if Western hadn't had that last touchdown, I would have been totally enthused about everything on defense. But, you know, I do think that it's really going to come down to like three or four times when Clawson drops back and just chucks it downfield, and whether those are incomplete or catches. Right. Yeah. And if he can get it off. Right. So, I mean, if Graham's just, you know, living in the backfield or Martin's living in the backfield, then I think Michigan's got a shot.
It's just a shot, though? You think Notre Dame's probably still going to be heavily favored?
I think that if Notre Dame doesn't have two long passing touchdowns, they lose the game. I think that they're kind of likely to get two long passing touchdowns, especially if Sissoko isn't full go, which I sincerely hope he is. I think he will be. He looked pretty okay.
At the press conference, Rodriguez mentioned that he would probably be fine for Notre Dame.
They played him and they held out Minor, and so they are obviously inclined to hold people out. But I'm more confident now. I'm not super confident. It's a home game. I think Michigan has the ability to move the ball. I think that they can win a shootout. I don't think they're going to win by scoring 20 points, but I think they can win by scoring 28. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I won't be hugely disappointed in a close loss, but I feel pretty good about where the team is and that they've moved past this whole free press scandal thing-ish. That was the most important MAC game in the history of the program, and they came through it with flying colors and Excelsior, etc.
I agree with you. I guess coming into the season, I thought Notre Dame was almost an auto loss. At this point, I think we certainly have a fighter's chance. With home field advantage, it's going to help a lot. Clawson hasn't really excelled on the road. You can't really count the Hawaii Bowl, if you ask me, especially since Hawaii's pass defense last year was terrible. But he hasn't excelled in an away game yet, so maybe he'll be a little rattled by that still. Who knows? And I think that any Michigan fan's expectations, even seeing Notre Dame beating Nevada by 35-0 score, is going to be slightly upgraded. And if you're playing on Saturday, there's a chance. If you play the game on paper, probably not. I guess is what happens.
Well, I don't even know about the paper. No, the paper's a lot different than it was before the season.
True.
That's true. Michigan really put the spurs to somebody, and it looked like a legitimate offense. And that's just totally different than it was last year.
Now we're going to talk to Brian Stover from the House Rock Built, and he will tell us what he saw from Nevada's loss to Notre Dame and what we can expect out of both teams in this week's game.
Our guest is Brian Stover, who's the guy behind House Rock Built, the now dormant Notre Dame blog that did give the world the Mike Valenti Hurricane Katrina rant, which is something to really put on a gravestone, Brian. It's a fantastic accomplishment.
Well, wow, thank you.
And he joins us to talk about, obviously, the Notre Dame game coming up. Notre Dame just beat Nevada 35-0. What were your general impressions from that game?
Well, it was a fun game to be at. I'm sorry, my voice is really shot over here. I'm drinking some hot tea right now. But when I go to the first game of the season, I tend to think I'm in mid-season form and usually wear out my voice. It was real good game, though. Team looked real good. You know, we always come into the season expecting the worst as Notre Dame fans.
Welcome to the club.
It was kind of nice to see us actually doing kind of what we're supposed to do in the opening game of the season against a WAC opponent.
Yeah, so I don't think anybody was totally surprised with what happened when Notre Dame had the ball. Like, so Michael Floyd, who's, I keep calling him Braylon Edwards in the wrong uniform, had four catches for like 190 yards against what was the worst pass defense in 1A last year by something like 30 yards. They were the Notre Dame 2007 of 2008 pass defenses. So that all went to plan, right? So they like Tate and Floyd and Clawson look like just like a bomb factory, basically, right?
Yeah, we got a lot of weapons spread out in the receiving game, plus our tight end Rudolph too. Basically, Nevada didn't have anything to counter sort of the array of stuff that we had out there.
Is Rudolph's a sophomore?
They didn't have enough guys on the field to cover everybody, so we were finding our open guys.
Rudolph's a sophomore, right?
He's a sophomore, yeah.
Okay. What did you guys learn about like the run game at all? Because I know that like Weiss is a you know, run game has been sort of a bugaboo. Blue Gary Scry spent like 8,000 man hours this offseason breaking it down. Did it look better? Did it look okay? Is it hard to tell against a WAC team?
Well, yeah, it's kind of difficult to tell. You know, since we're throwing the ball kind of at will there, too. We did an average somewhere over 4 yards carry.
4.3. We just ran the numbers.
So that was nice. It was nice to see that. it's been sort of a 5-year process to find anything resembling a running game under White. We're still looking at, Armando Allen was taking the bulk of the carries there. We're still trying to see him kind of break through to actually becoming a full-time running back. He has some good plays, and then he still kind of looks like he goes down after first contact a little too fast.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Mike Shaw. He's very fast, can really cut up into a hole, but doesn't break on the ball. Doesn't break through tackles very well. So I think that, pretty much the most important matchup in the game is going to be whoever is Notre Dame's tackle on either right or left, because Michigan's been flipping around against Brandon Graham. Graham could have had 3 sacks. He hit Western quarterback 3 or 4 times just as he was getting rid of the ball. He looked very, very, very good, and of course he had 10 sacks last year. How's your tackle situation shaping up?
Well, the left tackle, for the blind side on Clawson, that's kind of, it's still kind of a mystery. We're kind of rotating a couple guys through there. Clawson got hit a couple times in the game, from some shady play on the left side there. It's always a question mark how that's going to be able to hold up over there.
Yeah, the pretty much the only bad thing that happened in the Western game from the Michigan perspective is that Michigan, they were moving in the second team defense late, and there was a virtual replay of the Golden Tate touchdown from last year's Notre Dame game, which is not a good thing to have on the week before the Notre Dame game, where it was actually JT Floyd got scorched in a one-man pattern, and the safety did not get over in time, and it was a 77-yard touchdown. So possibly the most surprising thing is that, it wasn't really the 35 that Notre Dame put up, it was the 0 that Nevada put up. Nevada was number 5 in total offense last year. So this seems like a major step forward for the Notre Dame defense. What, if anything, do you think was the cause of that?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm as shocked as anyone that it happened. That was the first shutout in the Charlie Weiss era. And even the games that we have, actually played well in, we've never really been able to put that sort of end-to-end defensive performance there. I'm not really sure what's going on there. We were giving up some yardage. It looks like we're kind of playing a bend but don't break kind of offense or defense there. Their running back had about 160, 170 yards. It looks like we're trying to keep everything in front of us, and then we had the fortune of getting a couple good sort of turnovers. But I'm not really sure what's going on. We had good linebacker play, and our defensive backs were able to keep everything in front of them. And I guess things bounce your way. You can turn into a real good defensive performance doing that. Yeah, we got a couple fortuitous turnovers in the zone.
They had about 300 yards, right?
Yeah, we gave up some yards. It was kind of a bend but don't break sort of thing. Our defensive backs were keeping everything in front of them, and we were kind of stretching out their runs to the sideline and chasing them down. They would get some yardage if they gashed us over the middle there. I think the running back had like 170 yards or so during the game.
Yeah, Vi Tawa had 114 yards on 18 carries for 6.3 yards a carry.
Wow, that seems like that might be a concern against the Michigan team.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Racked up 240 yards against Western.
Yeah, again though, that's you're talking about the way that Nevada's offense is lined up. It's kind of that side to side. Well, it's somewhat similar to Michigan's sort of spread thing. Trying to use their angles to pick up some big running yards. They're a good running team. The fact that they put up some yardage against us wasn't too surprising. But I think the fact that we were able to keep any big plays from happening all game was killer.
So you guys have probably the strongest part of your defense is the secondary with Darren Walls back, a couple good safeties. Michigan managed to get a couple guys deep, but Junior Hemingway is probably not a burner. He's just solid with his routes. Do you think that they're going to be able to pull the same thing off against Michigan?
Well, our secondary game is really good. They can pretty much keep up with anybody there. I just kind of wonder if anyone from Michigan can be able to throw the ball into the hands of anyone who gets free down in the secondary. I think that's probably where
Well, I don't know if you saw the game.
Aspect of that
but
what can happen in the game.
Forcier was very accurate. And like he did, my goal to comparison for him has always been Drew Tate. And I love the play that his first touchdown where he scrambled out of the pocket and just sort of like motioned Hemingway downfield to break his route deep and then hit him like between the numbers. If you know, you guys bust a coverage, I think you're going to see Tate be able to take advantage of that. I don't know if Michigan's receivers will be able to get open against a high-quality secondary is the only thing. I mean, my take on this game has always been it's been a pretty bad matchup for Michigan defensively just because the safeties we have no idea about.
And our one piece of evidence is not the greatest.
Well, I mean, I was actually thinking to myself when they were playing the game that I was going to like vastly upgrade my opinion of what the safeties were going to do, and then they had that play.
I agree too. Yeah,
where yeah, it's just like everything was great, and then it's like, oh god, that was like if they had busted a run or something, or they had slipped a tackle, like if Stevie Brown had missed a tackle on a screen or something, and they had
which
busted
Stevie it. Brown didn't miss any tackles.
No, he didn't actually miss any tackles. If that had happened, I would have been like, okay, but like that's like pointed directly at Notre Dame's strength. That was a little uncomfortable. Do you guys have had pretty tough luck with kickers of late? Any indication that's going to end?
Well, we got a true freshman that was apparently came in and won the job in the offseason there. We obviously didn't get to see him kick any field goals. He kicked 5 extra points, and they all looked very lovely from my seat. We had a little, you know, he's doing the kickoff duty too. We're not really seeing the distance on kickoffs that we were kind of hoping for, but I don't know. Apparently, you know, everything that's coming out is that this kid's good and accurate and got a live leg. So I'm starting to think if we do ever have to count on a game with our kicker, yeah, maybe we'll have some optimism when that comes. Because it's been a long time since we've been able to count on anything, and you know, I think we've probably lost, I'd say probably 2 games a year because of bad kicking in the last 2 years.
So. Wow, that's impressive. This is a very like sports talk radio question to ask, but you know, Charlie Weiss has been under a lot of pressure, and you seem to be sort of on the fence about him. At what point do you think, I'm not going to say he gets fired, but what point do you think his job becomes in serious question if they don't get to X wins this year?
You know, yeah, it's a little bit hard to tell based, you know, a strict number kind of thing. Obviously, you know, I think it's fair to say that he's fighting for his job this year. It's going to make a big deal what happens. Again, you know, the last thing any Notre Dame fan, I think, wants deep down is to go through another coaching search. Because if anything that we've learned from the last 3, 4, 5 coaching searches is that you know, chances are you're going to end up with something much worse than you could have imagined.
Yeah, believe me.
We don't entrust anybody, you know, in the office to actually do a competent coaching search, something that won't be a huge embarrassment to us nationally. And actually get somebody that's worthwhile. So,
but Gruden's actually out there now, so
yeah. Well, definitely, you know, that's the same question. And it seems like any time Notre Dame does a coaching search, everyone crawls out of the woodwork to to decline the offer.
Like Era's like, no, not this time either.
I'm sure. Yeah. So it's, you know, hopefully the athletic department's at least keeping an eye on, you know, what's possible out there. But, you know, there's a little optimism that we'll be able to do something. So, really, we just need to, you know, what we really need to see is for this team to kind of live up to its potential, I think. That's the biggest thing.
So what is that? What counts as its potential, I guess? Like, I don't know if anyone expects USC to be beaten, but other than that, I mean, there doesn't appear to be a team on the schedule that...
Yeah, well, I think that's what it is. You know, you look at that schedule, I mean, on paper, I think, you know, this we're better than 11 teams on paper. It's kind of been that case. You know, last year we were certainly better than more than 6 teams on our schedule.
But, Syracuse, for instance?
You know, I think as long as we kind of... No, I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell what's... You know, I'll tell you when I see it. If this team is done what it needs to do or not. And hopefully, you know, even with USC, you know, that's one of the great teams in football. But I think... Eventually, sometime in his career, Weiss needs to keep a game within 30 or 40 points. that's at some point that's going to have to happen.
9-3, everybody says he's safe. You agree with that?
Well, again, it depends. There's a lot of different 9-3s.
a lot of different ways to get to that record.
Sure, it's true.
You know, also, fortunately for Notre Dame, 9-3 means BCS Bowl too. So that
I don't know. It might be tough.
Yeah, exactly.
With BYU beating Oklahoma, well, and Boise
don't they get the auto bid at 9 wins?
Oh, that's true.
Not an auto bid at 9 wins. It's auto bid at 10. The BCS ranking. Like,
yeah, it's about the BCS. Okay. Yeah, which that might be tough to do if they've got like a loss and there's like Boise would probably be in front of them at a point, then BYU mm-hmm. would be as well. So that's
yeah,
like
I think it, you know, and I think it somehow with how the mathematics and stuff work out, if a team does get like a non-BCS conference team gets an auto bid, I think that's bad for us because it changes the number of spots or something like that.
Because they would have to be selected as an at-large. So, mm-hmm. like, yeah, the opening couple games of the season with that are important big like mid-major games were yeah. not kind to Notre Dame's chances. I mean, I don't know if you guys even want to go to the BCS at 9-3.
I don't think that's not the direct goal, I think, from this season. But I think we just want to see improvement. We want to see this team do what it needs to do, and you know, we'll take the best bowl that we get invited to, but I don't think that's not the end goal to get into a BCS, because that doesn't exactly say a lot about the team. Really, we want to perform better. We'll worry about the bowl game when it comes.
So you didn't happen to catch the Western Michigan game, did you?
No, not so much.
No, I'll describe what happened to you. Basically, Forcier came in and was very accurate. I think he was
he flew in on a unicorn and threw infinity touchdown passes.
He looked very, very good. And then Robinson came in, fumbled his first snap as a quarterback, and ran it for a touchdown. Okay. And then did a lot of like things where he was about one guy away from breaking a tackle and then fell down. And then Nick Sheridan came in and threw an interception.
That was a great story, yeah.
Just to remind us all.
Yes. Kind of a shame I missed that.
Yeah, it was delightful in all ways from a Michigan fan's perspective who argued vociferously that Nick Sheridan had no shot at the starting job. So, I mean, this is actually possibly the first time in 3 years that nobody is going to be able to put together a Yakety Sax reel after the game.
Well, I don't know. Neither of us, I think, wants to build up too much confidence.
That's true. I mean, like,
something
all
about this series has always told me that there's always a potential for a Yakety Sax to happen on either side. You never really count it until the game's over.
All right, like, I will pledge to you that, like, if it is a close, well-played game, there will be no Yakety Sax on my part. Like 38-0, all right. 35-17 with 6 turnovers and a monsoon, all right. But if it actually looks like football, even if Michigan wins, there will be no Yakety Sax on my part.
Well, I think that's what we're all hoping for, something to actually look like a football game. That would be a refreshing change of pace.
That would. Like, it's amazing like how far the rivalry has like fallen from like the big Manning, the first Yakety Sax game, actually. That was a big game when mm-hmm. Notre Dame was like, were they number 2 or something?
Yeah, they were number 2. Michigan was number 14.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just been cripple fights ever since. And I mean, I enjoyed like the cripple fight that we came out on top of, but I would enjoy it much more if I didn't look at Notre Dame as like a really, really annoying version of a MAC team. Because MAC teams also beat us. It's not good. Notre Dame and Michigan, we may hate each other, but we are stuck together in all ways.
Yeah, we got another 30 years of this, so I think it's in both of our interests to get our football.
That's
together.
True. I mean, like if it's like this for 30 years, that would just be awful. We should talk about the game probably some more. Do you have a prediction, a feeling, a foreboding in your chest?
Well, yeah. Well, I've got all kinds of awful feelings about it. But, you know, it's kind of hard to tell to predict anything at this point. I've always felt, you know, it's been my theory that the team that's more desperate for a win usually is the one that comes out on top in this series. And this year, I think I'm not quite sure which team has more to prove.
It is a toss-up.
I think we're kind of, you know, it just happens that both teams are really trying to prove something this year. So I think it's a kind of a wash when it comes to that section.
Yeah, I really don't know what's going to happen. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen in last year's Notre Dame game, but I think I should have in retrospect. like that was just wild optimism on my part. And this one feels like genuine. The thing is with Michigan's its secondary is that the two starting corners are very good. And then once you get past that, there's nothing. There's a... Mm-hmm. The guy who got torched by the MAC receiver, JT Floyd, and then there's Justin Turner, who's a true freshman who didn't play at all. So, I mean, there's if either corner is hurt and Sissoko is sort of dinged up, or they there's just like a third Notre Dame receiver, then that's probably a big problem for Michigan. Does Notre Dame have a third receiver?
Well, we've kind of rotated a few guys in. We don't have like an officially titled third guy. We've been rotating. I think we're starting to use the tight end, Rudolph. Like on our first touchdown, we kind of throw him straight at the safety and try and get matchups that way.
Sure, I'm not that.
Like, he was real effective, just cutting it right down the middle and going man on man.
Yeah, it's like seam
at the beginning of the game, and then when they started rolling some more coverage onto him, well, that just opened up, you know, Michael Floyd for his 200-yard day. So I think we're really using the tight end downfield as a way to, you know, to draw more defenders and create more one-on-one matchups.
See, that would have been a much bigger concern from Michigan's standpoint last year when strong side linebacker was Johnny Thompson, who I don't know if you remember Johnny Thompson, but he was basically a 1985 vintage middle linebacker trying to cover anybody. But this year they moved Stevie Brown down there. And I know what you're thinking about Stevie Brown, but
he looks competent.
He looks competent. He's always pretty good in man coverage. You know, he's probably pretty well suited for covering Floyd. I don't know about standing up to Floyd when he tries to block, but that's the one thing that I think favors Michigan in this game is that they have a very light defense and they should be able to cover a lot of guys, and Notre Dame is not the kind of team that is going to be able to exploit that, at least if Weiss's history is any indication.
Sure, yeah. I think that's going to be the key for Michigan on defense, just keeping everybody covered. You know, the more that we have to sort of line it up and win it at the line of scrimmage, that doesn't play well to what this team does and what they can do. So,
yeah,
I think that's the best shot for Michigan.
What are your keys for Notre Dame defensively? Just
well, you know, we were talking about this right now. I'm not sure if you watched the Notre Dame game all the way through the fourth quarter when the subs came in, but we got our first peek at Teo, the wonderful, magnificent Hawaiian freshman linebacker. And he came into the third quarter. You know, they kind of gave him some sub time, you know, as a true freshman to kind of get his feet wet. And he just absolutely murdered people. I mean, the man is a murderer. He shouldn't be out, like, not in handcuffs. He completely de-cleated two people. And he goes sideline to sideline. And I want to see him involved in the Michigan game plan, because I think that kind of talent, that speed and sort of absolutely killing people with hits, it could be necessary against, you know, a team with a sort of offensive style that Michigan's be throwing. I don't know if he's going to be in or not, but
yeah, the only problem
that's how I would game plan it.
The only problem with that, I think, is Michigan ran a lot of misdirection against Western, and freshmen do tend to get out of position. And if you're a freshman in Illinois named Martez Wilson, that lasts forever because you're coached by Ron Zook.
Well, interesting. You know, on the two big plays that he made, though, in the fourth quarter were both kind of missed. One was, like, on a screen pass.
Oh, really?
And the other one was on a run where they tried to do misdirection on him, too. So he's actually got really amazing instincts for a kid who was in high school last year.
Yeah, that was the one downer from signing day last year when Michigan was picking up all these guys, and it's like, Manti Te'o picked Notre Dame instead of USC. And I was like, what? Come on.
Yeah, I still haven't been able to explain that one. You know, his official visit was at the Syracuse game. We had 2 feet of snow on the field, and it was probably the most embarrassing loss Notre Dame suffered in recent memory. And so, you know, we were leaving that game partially upset about the Syracuse, but, you know, the season was already kind of over at that point, and also like, well, boy, that was just a really bad performance for a recruit, I think.
Wasn't there like some sort of NCAA controversy about like the student section wanted everyone to wear lays and that didn't like wasn't allowed?
I think there was about wearing lays and some people did it. I think the university just wasn't allowed to sanction it or endorse it or recognize it.
Right, yeah.
And probably rightfully so. But there was sort of a grassroots movement to wear a lot of lays.
Well, apparently it paid off.
Yeah, whatever they did, hey man, that's it worked.
And, like, you can't even, like, go to, like, the usual, like, explanations of why this kid picked Colorado over a bunch of schools, right? Because it's Notre Dame. Like, Bronco Mendenhall, did you see that quote from him, like, during, like, WAC Media Days or something when somebody asked him about Teo? And he's like, I'm not going to talk about Teo, but some people who don't go to BYU are terrible Mormons. It's just like, dude, Bronco, he, like, you know, I've talked my share of crap about Notre Dame, but, like, you can't pull that card out when a kid picks Notre Dame. That's just not.
He'll have to answer it, you know, in the next life.
I was like, when Tommy Amaker was recruiting Torrey Jackson, and there was this big, like, story about how he was about to commit to Michigan, and then, like, his people and his handlers got involved, and then the kid commits to Notre Dame, and you're just like, dude, that is not a valid explanation for why the kid did not pick Michigan. It's just so.
Yeah, it's a real strange hidden world that goes on in recruiting.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I think you don't want to see how your laws are made or your sausage is made or how your recruiting is made.
That's absolutely true.
You're probably better off not knowing about. Yeah.
All right, so we should wrap this up. We are getting close to the 30-minute mark. So do you have a prediction you can pull out of your nether regions and provide to us that we can mock later or rue our heads at shakefully? We're going to keep that one.
I like that one. That's good. Well, let's see. I don't know. I'm always hesitant to, you know, that's what the kind of the amazing thing about this thing is it's just a great game at making you look like an idiot afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything you ever try and predict or rationalize on it. You know, I mean, I liked what I saw last week with Notre Dame. It looks like we're putting together a lot of the sort of giant weaknesses we had last year. Again, it's only one game, and, you know, that's the most dangerous optimism comes after the first game. But I think we got enough weapons downfield, you know, to put up some points. I worry about the defense. You know, despite pitching a shutout, they looked a little bit soft against the run, kind of the age-old problem that we've had there.
That's actually one thing I'm worried about. Are you worried that Michigan's going to be able to repeat that performance, or is that something that you're kind of on the fence about still?
Yeah, well, it definitely sticks with you, you know, when you think. I mean, even last year, Michigan just, you know, they ran all over Notre Dame. It was, you know, the turnovers were very helpful in mitigating that.
But, yeah, that game was crazy last year.
You know, McGuffey had a whole ton of yards.
And everybody was so excited.
So, yeah,
about
I think, you know, that's probably the easiest way for things to go downhill is if we can't stop the run and we're giving up the corners to, you know, to the running backs with some speed. Yeah, I think Notre Dame can probably hold it out. And do I have to give a score? Or just I'd say a close game of real football without any yakety sack.
It's going to be a little yakety sack.
Notre Dame emerges victorious.
Our quarterbacks are still freshmen, but that is a prediction of a Notre Dame victory from Brian Stouffer. That was Brian Stouffer of the House Rock Belt previewing the Notre Dame game. We talked about Western earlier. This has been MGO Podcast 1.3. Next week is Eastern Michigan. There are no Eastern Michigan blogs, so we will dig up somebody to talk about something. Probably a Michigan blogger, yet to be determined. Greg Dooley, if you're listening, call me.